This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
That's something that the transition movement is good at. You know, how do you find those stories of places where people are, you know, phasing out the plastic, but in doing so, enabling all kinds of things to happen that weren't able to happen before. You know, I think that model that we have in the global north, where we look at places and say, isn't it terrible what they're doing? The reality is that those economies are largely designed to make stuff and export it to us cheaply, and they're using our economic development model. So it's for us to show some kind of alternative narrative, I think.
What would it take to get your neighborhood, community, or town to unify behind the shift to sustainability? This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to the founder of the Transition Network, Rob Hopkins, about the movement to generate universal appeal for sustainable practices by working locally. We examine some of the network's successes, talk about parallel efforts in the developing world, and discuss the best ways for people to get involved in the transition away from fossil fuels. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Rob Hopkins. Rob is the founder of the Transition Movement, and he's coming to us from southwestern England. Rob, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Lovely. Thanks for having me on.
So explain what the Transition Movement is and the Transition Network. People can find out more at transitionnetwork.org. In a nutshell, what is it?
Yeah, so about 12 years ago, a group of us who were very concerned about climate change and who were sort of, I guess, rooted in more positive solutions-based things like permaculture and stuff like that, started thinking about what would a bottom-up community-led approach to these big challenges like climate change, energy insecurity, economic instability, social fragmentation, all these things, what would it look like if it started from us rather than starting from government policy and that kind of thing? And so we started here in this town where I live called Totnes, a kind of an experiment, really framed around asking what if questions and then doing something about it. So we just started it off here, and then it kind of went really viral around the world. And you'll now find transition groups in about 50 different countries around the world. And so we, after about 6 months to a year of us starting doing transition here, there was so much interest, and we were getting emails from Mongolia and Iran and New Zealand and all sorts of places of people wanted to start this. So we started an organization called Transition Network to support it. So we now think about the transition movement as a movement of communities who are reimagining and rebuilding the world. And both parts of that are really important, because the number of spaces in our lives in 2018 where we can come together with other people and imagine the future that we would like is dwindling. And then we always put it in the context of, all right, so let's do something about it. So in practical terms, what you see happening in those transition groups, whether they're in the US or Australia or Italy or Brazil, wherever, is a kind of a flowering of what we think of as local resilience. So more local food systems, community-owned energy projects, new democracy models, new models for people to invest their money into their local economy, reimagining the food and that kind of thing. So it's very proactive, very creative, very imaginative, and a lot of fun.
So if somebody wanted to do one of these projects, let's say open up a community food shop or helping a school grow food, etc., how would they access Transition Network, and how would your organization help them get jump started?
Yeah, so if you're listening in the US, which I'm assuming most people are, there is a Transition US are the organization that networks the many transition groups across the US together. So if you have a look at the Transition US website, there you'll find different resources and videos and all sorts of things that they have developed. And we created something called the Essential Guide to Doing Transition, which is a sort of free download guide with a real condensation of useful tips for how to get started. And there's also a book that we did a year or so ago, which again you can find free on the Transition Network website, called 21 Stories of Transition, which gives people a really good sense of the kind of diversity of what people are doing on the ground. There's stories in there about local currencies and free shops and new community-run cafes, but also some really big and bold and imaginative stuff, like the city that started its own community energy company that has already raised £13 million of investment from local people. There's a really wide spectrum. And one of the things that's really important for us in transition is that, you know, the tendency in our culture is, if someone comes to me and says, so how successful is transition, that I'm supposed to then, you know, talk about those really big economically successful projects with big numbers attached to them. And I'm always happy to tell those stories, but as well, equally as important, I think, are the smaller stories of just people on their street, people in their apartment block, people, as you say, in their school, who start a project there and just sort of see where it goes. And often those projects go off in all sorts of directions that nobody imagined when they started.
Of the projects that are inspired by the Transition Network, what percentage would you estimate are rural versus urban initiatives?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a figure off the top of my head. I would say it's probably pretty evenly balanced between the two. But I think the important thing to note is that with cities, generally what happens is that transition works at the neighborhood scale. So it takes, you know, so there is no transition London, for example. London, trying to transition London, I think, would make anybody's head explode. Mm. But if you break London down into the kind of neighborhood scale, most cities feel like a collection of villages and neighborhoods that people really identify with. So there are now something like 50 different neighborhoods across London who have transition happening at that neighborhood scale. And the beauty, I think, of working at that neighborhood scale is you can kind of move faster. You can get a lot done just by getting on with it. And there's something that's really kind of freeing in that. There's a real sort of agility, I think, to transition when you work at that scale. What you then find after a while is that neighboring transition groups start to collaborate with each other. You get a kind of an informal network. So there is now a London Transition Network, which is those London groups who share information, share events, share stories, work together where it feels useful. But still, the kind of, you know, they are all individual initiatives working at the neighborhood scale. In rural areas, there are also many transition groups. I think when we started doing it in the UK, and I'm sure it's the same in US, you know, there are in the US, there are certain places that have certain towns or cities that are the more kind of progressive cities, you know, the places that you would kind of expect. I guess in America it would be like Portland and places like that. You know, and here there were five or six of those places that have for a long time had a role of being like laboratory towns, laboratory cities that everybody has kind of sniggered at as being a bit out there, but actually have played a really important role as laboratories. And maybe the first 10 here were like that, but now they're just popping up in all sorts of different places, in favelas in Brazil, in small villages in Japan. You know, that it's a model that's very adaptable and really will morph to suit the location.
You mentioned the favelas in Brazil. That was kind of my next question. Is the next real challenge, I would assume, would be to really make a dent in developing communities where survival and comfort are usually the top priorities over sustainability and trying to wean oneself off of fossil fuels.
Yeah, totally. And I think the... You know, when we designed transition, one of the things that was really in our in the forefront of our mind was a model called contraction and convergence, which was this climate model that says, you know, the developed world, the global north, has a kind of is consuming way too much energy, way too much resources. It needs to cut its carbon emissions by about 80% over the next, say, 30 years, down to a level that is sustainable, and then the global south can come up a bit to meet us at that point, and then we have a level which is kind of equitable and sustainable. You know, we really designed transition to be the kind of the model by which the global north would make that journey down, because actually what we felt was missing at the time was the narrative that said the place we can get to at the end of this could be potentially so much better than where we start from now. So we're only going to make a shift like that if we have a story, if we have the right narratives, if we have a sense that that's what we really, really want, because when we get there, the food will be better, the beer will be better, the parties will be better, the conviviality will be better, we'll feel happier, more connected, and so on and so on. And we need to be telling those stories about what that could be like. What's been really intriguing over the last few years has been to see transition, which, as I say, we really designed as that kind of detox for the affluent global north, emerging as a model in the global south as well. So last weekend there was the national gathering of transition groups all across Brazil. There was also, I think this weekend, there's a gathering of transition groups all across Colombia. We see transition in South Africa, like I said, in favelas in São Paulo. And it sits alongside those kind of models like Buen Vivir and Via Campesina and those things that are arguing that it's not about alternative models of development, it's about alternatives to development, which is rooted in kind of indigenous understandings and new economic models. But it's fascinating to see transition being picked up as a tool and adapted and changed for people in the global south as well. You know, and that's not because we run transition like some kind of Coca-Cola franchise and we put a pin in the map and say, now we take Brazil. It's really that just people in Brazil have been inspired by that set of tools and have taken it and made it their own.
Yes, I mean, anybody who's been to developing countries coming from a developed nation, one of the first things that they may encounter is the vast amount of plastic bag use. I mean, they're just cheap, handy ways to carry things, and they are not really considered environmental hazards by populations there. How do we create a sense of urgency in those communities to try to get them to realize, A, that it's not a great solution, and B, how do we replace the plastic bags in their lives?
Well, I think that, you know, the important thing, you know, there are different bits to that. I suppose, you know, in terms of the levels of plastic in the oceans, the vast majority of that is coming from Vietnam, China, places in the south, southeast Asia, and also from the fishing industry. A massive amount of the plastic that is actually causing these dead zones in the ocean is actually just stuff that the fishing industry has discarded. In terms of places like China, where the amount of plastic in the rivers going out to the sea is way, way, way higher than anything that we're seeing kind of in most of the global north, I think, you know, we have to recognize that there is a particular model of development that we have pioneered and exported to the rest of the world. And the idea that you wrap everything in plastic and take everything home in plastic is seen as progress and is seen as desirable, because that's the model that the UK and maybe more so the US has exported through media and capitalism all around the world. So, you know, so for me, there is obviously the sense of, you know, there are initiatives needed in those countries. But for me, the key thing that we need to be doing is that we need to be telling a new story about what progress looks like here, and then telling that story, you know, and that's that's something that the transition movement is good at. You know, how do you find those stories of places where people are, you know, phasing out the plastic, but in doing so, enabling all kinds of things to happen that weren't able to happen before. You know, I think that model that we have in the in Global North, where we look at places and say, isn't it terrible what they're doing? The reality is that those economies are largely designed to make stuff and export it to us cheaply, and they're using our economic development model. So it's for us to show some kind of alternative narrative, I think. You just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on me when you're
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Rob Hopkins. He is the founder of the Transition Movement. So Rob, you're featured in a new book that profiles a lot of the work that is being done in the transition movement. Maybe you can give us some details.
Yeah, so there's a guy who lives in France called Lionel Astruc, who is a writer, and he came and spent about a week with me here and interviewed me a few times every day and wrote this book, which is a format that's quite popular in France, which is sort of interview-based books. And it'd be really interesting to see how if it works in the US and in the UK. So it came out of a film that was made in France called Tomorrow, or Demain in French, which came out in December 2015 during COP21, which has been absolutely phenomenal. And it's a film which is a really upbeat story about the future that we could create from now, with lots of stories about renewable energy, food, tells a whole new sort of vision of the future. And it was absolutely massive in France. It won the best documentary at the French Oscars. It was seen by millions of people. And I appear in the film. And so they've done this series of books of interviews with some of the people who appeared in the film. And so the book kind of tells a bit my life story, I suppose, and how transition got started and where it goes and what the whole idea is. So, yeah, it's called The Transition Starts Here Today or something. And it's just come out in English in the US.
Are you going to link to that on transitionnetwork.org?
Yeah, there will be a link to that. And I think in the US, if people want to order it, the thing is to go to Chelsea Green Publishing's website and you can order it from there. I mean, the thing that was wonderful about this film Tomorrow was that it was... you know, most environmental films, if you think of An Inconvenient Truth or any of those sorts of films, really, you know, they're 98% we're in a real mess and we're doomed, and then they have that sort of 2% happy chapter on the end, which says, but hey, we could do something about it, by which time nobody really believes that that's possible. And in Demand, they turn it the other way around. They got the problem out of the way in the first 2 minutes, and the rest of it was just, right, let's go and find solutions and see what we can do about it. And it has been, it's really helped to raise the profile of transition in France. When I go there, I get invited to all sorts of places just because I'm that guy out of Demain. It's quite a nice, I mean, I've written several books about transition, but the nice thing about this book is it's kind of a different format. It's someone else's take based just on conversations. So we'll see what people think about it.
So Rob, here in the US we have a loud minority that has somehow been able to get Donald Trump and his ilk in power. And there's a lot of people with their heads in the collective sand in terms of climate change. There is also a small but loud movement of Brexiters in England and people who don't necessarily want to embrace sustainable solutions. What are some of the challenges that the Transition Network faces in trying to get through to those people? And what are some of the most effective projects that you can think of that have appealed to the higher hanging fruit, let's say? Like, I saw that you had a start a hop club. Everybody likes beer, right? Like, so maybe everybody some of those examples. Beer. And you actually brew beer, don't you?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I'm involved with starting here in my town is a social enterprise craft brewery called the New Lion Brewery. And as you say, one of the things that we have is a hop club where people grow hops, kind of dwarf variety of hops that crop very heavily that people grow in their gardens, on their balconies, their allotments or whatever. And that's been really, really popular. We have about 70 people now, and then there's a day in September where they all harvest them, bring them into the brewery, and then we brew a beer with them and everybody gets some of the beer. I think you're right. You know, we have, these are times that I think people are becoming increasingly politically polarized. And one of the things that we work at very hard in transition is to try and find that common ground with people and to try and remove obstacles to getting involved. It's one of the things I notice in many different ways in the kind of green progressive left or whatever you want to call it, is often there's this real need to set out a stall of all the things that people have to agree with you in order to get involved. You know, that actually you can get involved in our project provided you believe that, you know, in climate change and this, that, the other, whatever. And actually, one of the things that we try to do in transition is to try and strip all of that stuff out, actually, and to not put up a whole list of tick boxes you have to tick yes to before you can get involved. One of the examples here in my town, we have a project where every year we plant a number of fruit trees, nut trees in parks, just in unloved corners throughout the town. We've now over 400 looked after by the people who live nearby. You know, that's just a project people get involved in because they love getting involved in this sort of, they love to meet other people. I'm sure if we did a poll of the number of those people who get involved in something like that because they struggle to sleep at night because of climate change, it would be quite small. We work very hard in transition groups to ensure that there is no party political connection, so that they are as open to people from wherever they are on the political spectrum to get involved. I was in Belgium a month or so ago in a town, in a city called Liège, where I'd been 4 years ago when Liège en Transition were quite small, and they had just started then a project called Ceinture Alimentaire, which means food belt. And the whole project was founded on a what-if question, which was, what if in a generation's time the majority of food eaten in Liège was grown around Liège? And they brought together scientists and farmers and shoppers and chefs and anyone with an interest in food. And I was there at that first event. Then I came home. I didn't really hear that much about it. I went back after 4 years. They started 14 cooperatives, from a farm to two vineyards, a brewery, a pedal-powered delivery business around the city. They've started shops in the centre of the city. They've raised 5 million euros from people in the city investing in those co-ops to get them underway. The whole model has a real momentum to it. There's a local currency that called Le Valeureux that runs through the whole thing. And I met the mayor of the city of Liège, who said, 8 years ago, we wanted to be a smart city. Now we want to be a transition city. And the city municipality own a lot of land around the city, and they're making that land available to people to grow food on. You know, this thing has a real kind of momentum to it. The beautiful thing about it is that the barriers to people getting involved are very low, because everybody likes food. The food in those shops is 15% less than it would be to buy organic produce in the supermarket. People feel they own those businesses. So it's at every possible opportunity, it's how can we remove the obstacles to people getting involved, whether the language we use, even down to the fonts we use on the posters. You know, how can we design something that feels really inviting, really accessible, and kind of takes us away, in a sense, from the environmental movement and the things that tend to be the language that people use just to communicate to each other in that movement. How do we tell the stories that we want to tell so that they can reach across much more widely?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Rob Hopkins. He is the founder of the Transition Movement. So if you were just mentioning what you do and the idea of Transition Network and the Transition Movement to a stranger, what would be some of the ways that you would tell them to get involved?
Yeah, so I think maybe the first thing to do is to find out whether the place that you already live has a transition group. And that's quite easy to do just on the Transition US website or whatever, to find out what's already happening. So if there's something already there, then just go along and see how you can help, and if there's something that you can do, or you know, something you can take, get to help out. If there isn't, then you know, there are various different ways that people get started. So it might be organizing a screening of a film and just inviting people along and saying, are you interested? Should we give this a go? There's some good films about transition you could use to start that conversation. There's a very good two-day training, and there are some excellent transition trainers across the US who can run a two-day training about how to get started with doing transition where you are. I always say to people, think of something you can do that is kind of playful and not what people expect from climate change activists. You know, so there's a town in Spain where in the middle of the town there's orange trees that make bitter oranges. You don't really pick bitter oranges and eat them because they're bitter, obviously. So, but once a year, all the transition group go down there, they pick them all and they make it into marmalade in the square and then give all the marmalade away and make an event of it. I went to a town in Belgium where they have a community supported agriculture farm in market garden there in the town. Once a year, they grow a big patch of potatoes. They dig them all. They have a day where they dig them all up. They make them into chips, French fries there, and everyone's invited to come and help themselves. There's a beautiful project in London where the community on a street came together and made wine in their street. They realized, lots of people on the street realized they didn't know each other, so they bought a load of grapes, made a pit, everybody took it in turns treading their grapes, they made wine, and they all got to meet each other and have fun and have a reason to do that. So I always look for those quirky, playful, why don't we make a garden in the street? Why don't we close the street off and have a street party? Those sorts of things that bring people together without a big sort of, we're doing this because the ice caps are melting and the polar bears are dying and sort of thing up front. But just start getting people together and meeting. And the Essential Guide and other transition resources have lots of different stories about what that can look like.
He's the founder of the Transition Movement. Folks can go to transitionnetwork.org to learn more. Rob Hopkins. Rob, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by James Brown and Bill Withers. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.